Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Movies and a Meal, a podcast where we talk about movies and other things while we eat. I'm your co-host, Ben, and as always, I'm joined by Keith.
Hey.
And Brad.
What's up?
All right, so we got three movies on the slate. We're going to talk about Damsel, a movie that's on Netflix starring Millie Bobby Brown. Then we'll go to The American Society of Magical Negroes. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to close out with Love, Lies, Bleeding. But first, we just need to recap our Oscar pick'em. You know, the Oscars were last week. And I'll just turn over to Brad for the official results.
Which are not pretty.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the official crowning of this year's champion. So, Brad, I'll leave it to you.
The final results. A two-time, now three-time champion, Kelly, won the contest. She got 8 of 9 correct. The only one she got wrong was Lily Gladstone for Best Actress. Our boy Ben finished in second with only 2 wrong, 7 of 9. I finished in third. Brandon, finished third, 6 of 9. And then Keith, the reigning champion from last year, finished with 5 of 9, right? Still batting over 500.
I'm going to file a protest. I don't know how I finished with only 5 out of 9.
Yeah. Congratulations, Kelly. Now our 3-time reigning champion in our contest.
Yeah. So we got to reach. We have to reach out to Kelly. Obviously, she already had 2 movies picked out for her previous win, so maybe we just need to amend our viewing list before we record that episode.
We need to get it done because she's going to keep winning.
Yeah, we're getting a little backed up, and then we still owe Keith a movie.
Yes.
Who Keith said he has selected a movie, but it's still undisclosed.
It's going to be a surprise.
I'd say the highlight of the night was probably Ryan Gosling singing on Just Ken.
Yeah, so. I did watch that.
Next year, we'll start this all over again, and maybe we'll have a different winner. So
we hope so. We'll
you
hope
guys
so.
Need to step up.
Hey, I gave it as good as I got, Mr. Yeah. 5 out of 9.
I am a champion.
Yeah. Ben and I have finished in second at least once.
Yes,
so we,
yes.
We have runner-up once. So one of these days, Ben and I will not be...
I believe the famous phrase, Brad, is if you're not first, you're last.
Wow.
Well, when me or Brad run off like 10 in a row,
yes.
And we're dominating, and you're asking for the rule change because we just keep running, like,
yeah.
I'm just going to run this clip again.
What rule change could there be?
I don't know.
I'm telling you right now, if I ever win... Just for that comment, Keith, my movie I'm going to choose...
Clue.
My movie I'm going to choose is No Holds Barred, a very terrible wrestling movie with Hulk Hogan in it.
Yeah.
So, just be warned. Tiny Lister, Hulk Hogan.
Ricky Bobby, I'd like that.
No, it's...
So, just because you can't win, you're going to torture me?
No, because you're rubbing it in our face.
Yeah.
I'm going to choose a movie where you're going to be 10 minutes in and you're like, what the hell is this crap?
You're not very gracious for one guy who's only won it once.
Yeah, so...
Kelly, I mean, at least Kelly can see, because Kelly's won it 3 times.
Talking smack? It's the American way.
That's fine.
Just,
if you talk smack, be ready to get smacked back.
That's right. Okay.
I can take it.
Okay.
Now we got to drop the temperature here a little bit.
Yeah. So we'll let Keith cook here a little bit. So let's talk about the movies that we are going to review, or specifically the movies that Keith is going to review, and we'll start with Damsel first. That's on Netflix, starring Millie Bobby Brown among other people. So Brad, what's this movie about?
Summer is always courtesy of IMDb. A dutiful damsel agrees to marry a handsome prince, only to find the royal family has recruited her as a sacrifice to repay an ancient debt.
See, that's a good summary, because it doesn't spoil, I will assume, but it doesn't spoil what's really happening here, because it's pretty fun. Actually, I will tell you, because it's in the poster, it's Millie Bobby Brown battling a dragon, and you can't really go wrong with that. But, you know, the best thing you can say about this is that it delivers exactly what it says. You know, it's like Snakes on a Plane. In a movie that, it looks so great, though, this movie really should have been on a bigger screen, but even on Netflix, it's okay. It's a perfectly fun streamer, but far from a perfect movie. I went into this one as a bit of fluff after a very long workday, and it works pretty great for that. Before I get into the joys of Damsel, the way the story is structured by design makes the first 40 minutes or so mind-numbingly boring. As the story begins, we find out that Brown's Elodie is the eldest daughter of Lord Bayford, the ruler of a realm whose impoverished people are suffering. The always great Ray Winstone, who clearly in on the fun as Lord Bayford, promises Elodie's hand in marriage to the prince of the kingdom of Aria in exchange for the promise of riches to aid his subjects. Angela Bassett is somehow in this too as Elodie's stepmother, and the two of them manage to elevate this standard fare every time they're on screen. Unfortunately, the courtship of Elodie and Nick Robinson's Prince Henry is, like I said, by the book and just extremely boring, even for fans of princess sagas. Be prepared to suffer through this played out way too long before the action finally begins. But once it does, director Juan Carlos Fresnadillo best known for 28 Days Later, really delivers. And no longer a young girl, Brown is up to playing the heroine we need here. And once, for reasons I won't completely spoil here, Elodie is cast into the dragon's cave to do battle. This looks better than just about any Netflix movie ever made. From here on out, Damsel delivers with a dark fantasy and super action scenes as we're introduced to the dragon, voiced with Smoky Menace by Shura Agdashlu. It's a battle of wills as much as muscle, and it's really fun to watch unfold. This stretch indeed unfolds like a video game, but one that would be great to play, with Elodie discovering not just the bodies of the princesses that came before her, but all kinds of magical creations around every turn. That and the fresh sisterhood rules take on the traditional damsel in distress tale make Damsel well worth streaming, even with its entirely pedestrian beginning. With that, I'll give it 2.5 stars.
All right, Keith, Rotten Tomatoes, critics and audience, what you thinking?
Let's see. You know, I like this, and I think a lot of people did too. The critics, I will go 65. Mm-hmm. Fans, I will go 80. Everybody loves Millie Bobby Brown.
Critics, 56%, 106 reviews. Mm-hmm. Audience, 67%, 1,000 plus reviews.
So people were a little harsh on this. I get it. It's not the most deepest movie, but like I said, it's Millie Bobby Brown and a dragon. You can do a lot worse in streaming.
So. Mm-hmm. Critics consensus, courtesy of Rotten Tomatoes. Damsel has an appealing action hero in Millie Bobby Brown, whose gutsy performance is often enough to balance the scales against the film's underpowered story and occasionally unconvincing effects.
See, it sounds like they should have rated it higher than that, though. That consensus makes it sound is got it right. So, it's basically a good movie.
Audience says, courtesy of Rotten Tomatoes, Damsel is a decently made fantasy film, and Millie Bobby Brown does well in the title role, although it's easy to tell where the story's going and the CGI isn't great.
Oh, the CGI, I disagree with that. The movie looks pretty amazing.
All right, let's go. Let's move on to the next movie. And that movie is The American Society of Magical Negroes. It is a movie that is written, directed, and produced by Kobe Libby, I'll say.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And is a directorial debut. It stars, among other people, Justin Smith, David Alan Greer, Drew Tarver, and Nicole Byer, and Rupert Friend. But let's kick it back to B-Rad Dubs here for the summary. So, Brad, what's this movie about?
All right, summary courtesy of IMDb. A young man, Aaron, is recruited into a secret society of magical black people who dedicate their lives to a cause of utmost importance, making white people's lives easier.
Okay, all right. So, Keith, you had this on your most anticipated list.
Yes.
So we just talked about why you wanted to see this a couple of weeks ago. So what did you think?
Well, you can tell me laughing already at the title. You know, I was very excited as soon as I heard the title. How could you make a movie that's not funny called The American Society of Magical Negroes? I mean, the promise of the title is twofold. It should be a romantic comedy and it should be a sharp satire. However, it completely fails to deliver on both fronts and instead claims the title of my least favorite movie of the year so far, easily. The concept of the magical Negro in American cinema is indeed one ripe for satire in the hands of much better filmmakers. In a nutshell, the magical Negro is a black character who comes to the aid of white protagonists. The two most infamous might just be Will Smith's Bagger Vance and Morgan Freeman's Hope Colburn in Driving Miss Daisy, for the record, both of which I've never seen, so I can't comment about them. But sadly, the American Society of Magical Negroes is far too timid to take aim at this target, and instead delivers a mostly vanilla tale that bores at every turn. But what's it all about? At the outset, we meet Justice Smith's Aaron, a struggling artist who is bombing at his latest gallery show. From the beginning, a major problem here is that Smith plays the most bland possible character, and he clearly knows it, drifting through this lifeless mess with no passion at all. And it's more of a shame because the American Society of Magical Negroes does star two of my favorite black comedians, who sadly are almost completely wasted here. David Alan Greer tries his best to give this some life as Aaron's guide through the realm of the titular society, and Nicole Byer, likewise, dives right into the role of its leader, but they're sadly just given almost nothing to work with here. So if this movie fails as satire, as it does almost completely, can it still work as a romantic comedy? Sadly, no. Aaron's white charge, who he sent into rescue, is just the most unlikable hero just about ever, played with no charm at all by Drew Tarver. The only spark that comes in this is from the third leg of this would-be romantic triangle, Anlie Brown, as Lizzie, who, though she tries her best, really can't do anything to save this mess. So is there really any reason to see this, the writing and directing debut of actor Kobe Libby? Sadly, I really can't think of a single one, which is all the more sad given the promise of its premise and the fact that a razor-sharp satire on race, American Fiction, came out just last year. By Brad's standard, I suppose I have to give this 1 star simply because I did not walk out on it, but I was sorely tempted. So I will give The American Society of Magical Negroes 1 star.
Okay.
Begrudgingly.
It's more half star. If you see
exactly,
if you see the whole movie, it's a half star.
I would give it zero, but your standard is I didn't leave.
I don't know. I think Madam Web might be up for, but you had,
but you all spared me that one.
Yeah, Keith, Rotten Tomatoes, critics and audience.
I didn't look at Rotten Tomatoes, but I did see it IMDb where I go get the summary myself. They got one star, so I'm gonna guess people are nicer than me in general. Everyone's nicer than me. I'm gonna say 40% across the board.
Okay. Critics 30%, 47 reviews. Audience 61%,
okay.
17 reviews. So
I think there's some love in there, I think, for David Alan Greer and Nicole Byer, but they're funny people who deserve a much better movie.
Yeah. And critics consensus, courtesy of Rotten Tomatoes, the American Society of Magical Negroes has a promising premise, but is too timid to fully engage with its most provocative ideas.
Exactly. And it's also not a romantic comedy. It fails all around.
Let's move on to the third movie, and that is Love Lies Bleeding. It is a romantic thriller film directed by Rose Glass, starring Kristen Stewart, Katie O'Brien, Jenna Malone, Dave Franco, and Ed Harris. And again, for the third time, Brad, what is this movie about?
All right, summary is always courtesy of IMDb. Gym manager Wu falls for Jackie, a bodybuilder who is passing through town en route to a competition in Las Vegas.
I've often wondered why more directors don't make film noirs, because it's this dying art. It's an easy formula with a devoted fan base, which you can certainly count me as a member. Luckily, director Rose Glass, who previously made one of my favorite horror movies in St. Maud, is a big fan too, and a rising master at the art. She's certainly helped here by two young stars at the tops of their games. Kristen Stewart, who always picks interesting projects, and an amazing Katie O'Brien, best known to fans so far as comms officer Ilya Kane on The Mandalorian. Their love, delivered with full passion in a truly sweaty fashion, drives Love Lies Bleeding over a few rough patches to make it really sore. But what is Love Lies Bleeding, the big hit of this year's Sundance Film Festival, all about? At its heart, like I said, this is a film noir of the genuinely gritty variety that we sadly very rarely get nowadays. Think way back to the golden age for these, because for me, at least, it really isn't on a par with the true classics. And even more at home, next to great Coen Brothers movies like The Fargo, and best of all, Blood Simple. As we meet Stewart's Lulu, she's working at a gym in a truly desolate corner of New Mexico that's filmed with gritty style by cinematographer Ben Forsman. It's a dead-end existence until Katie O'Brien's Jackie enters the picture. Jackie, a seriously swole O'Brien, is hitching her way to a bodybuilding contest in Las Vegas and forms an instant and deep bond with Lulu. And before I dive deeper into the familiar but still thrilling story from Glass and co-editor Veronica Tolfiska, a word is due about the real passion we see here. Lesbian relationships on the big screen are often presented as something precious to be worshipped or observed from afar. But we're dropped right smack into the middle of Lulu and Jackie's torrid attraction, and it's a joy to watch. But of course, in a movie like this, things will go wrong early and often, largely due to Lulu's family. Ed Harris, with the world's greatest hair extensions, is clearly having fun as Lulu's dad and the local crime boss. And Dave Franco gives all the menace needed to her truly piece of trash brother-in-law. Without spoiling too much, it's when Lulu and Jackie decide to take action to save Lulu's sister, a fantastic Jenna Malone, from this monster that things really pick up and quickly unravel. There are a lot of twists and turns here, but they're all earned and all pay off with a frenetic and fantastic finish. And what makes this all work best is that Glass isn't really interested in just making a modern noir with a traditional femme fatale. All our characters here, especially Lulu and Jackie, have more edges than that and are delightfully complicated creations. At the finish, there's a jaw-dropping bit of magical realism, but I enjoy even that, as it all fits into Glass's singular vision of how Lulu views the world. And Glass, with St. Maud and Love Lies Bleeding coming 5 years apart, definitely deserves to work more often. With Love Lies Bleeding, she's created a modern noir that both worships the strictures of the genre while also blowing them up to make it all her own. For that, and for the two powerful performances at its core, I'll give Love Lies Bleeding 4 stars.
Yeah, I read the spoiler for the ending because IGN had.
Oh, it's nuts!
Yeah, and
well, it's not that crazy, but there's one weird, really weird moment.
Yes,
but without spoiling it, I'll tell you. I think it's all in Lulu's mind.
Okay,
and it didn't bother me.
Yeah,
you know, because obviously, if you know what it is, it couldn't happen.
Yeah,
you know?
No,
I mean, Katie O'Brien is swole, but she's not that swole.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I heard what happened. I was like, holy cow! I was like. I was wondering how you took it.
It didn't bother me at all. Because Lulu, she's so tired at that point. It's just kind of what she sees in her mind.
Gotcha.
Because, Jackie's her hero.
All right, Keith. For the final time, Rotten Tomatoes, critics and audience.
I know this is a big hit. I will go 90% for the critics and 85% for the fans.
All right. 92% on the critics, 153 reviews. 88%, 100-plus reviews for the audience. And critics consensus, courtesy of Rotten Tomatoes. Lust and violence collide to powerfully pulpy effect in Love Lies Bleeding, a well-acted addition to writer-director Rose Glass's growing body of exceptional work.
That's a very accurate summary, but sadly, she's only made two movies. She's made some shorts and some other stuff, but this is only her second feature. And St. Maude, as great as it is, was 5 years ago. Yeah. So she needs to work more often. So.
As far as the weekend box office this week...
I can't imagine that either of my movies did very well at all, because they're terrible.
Well...
Let's see.
Love... I'll start with where the movies you saw were.
Okay.
And then we'll finish the rest. Mm-hmm. We'll start from the bottom. The American Society of Magical Negroes finished in ninth...
Okay.
...with $1.25 million this
week. That's 1.24 more than it deserves.
Yeah. Oh. So... Finishing in sixth this weekend, out the top five, was Love Lies Bleeding with $2.5 million... And a two-week total of $2.7 million.
Not a lot, but it's a specialty kind of thing. You know, if you're offended by lesbians, you won't want to see it. I'm happy with that. I think it will be a streaming hit for sure. People will like this movie.
Now, for the rest of the top five, number five is Cabrini, which is...
Is that a nun movie?
Sort of.
Oh, it's a saint movie.
Yeah, it's 18th century. Mm-hmm. I was reading a little bit about it.
I was going to see that, but it sounds really boring.
Yeah, it made $2.8 million this week. Two-week total of $12 million.
So just edged out, Love Lies Bleeding.
Yep. Number four is Imaginary. Made $5.6 million this week.
That looked terrible.
Two-week total of $18.1 million.
So it came out last week.
Yeah.
Huh, no idea.
Arthur the King finished in third in its opening weekend at $7.5 million. Dune 2 moved to second, slightly behind our number one, with $29.1 million, a three-week total of $205.3 million.
It made $29 million just this week.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
And finishing in first, just edging out Dune 2, Kung Fu Panda 4.
Nice.
$30 million this week, two-week total of $107.7 million. That's good numbers from box office.
Well, those animated movies, unless they're terrible, it's bank.
Not just them. Like Arthur the King made $7.5 million. Yeah, I mean, that's
not great.
That's not great, but I mean, compared to some other movies
it's a good weekend for the box office.
Yeah, so I mean, that's doing some quick math here. That's probably around like $70 million.
Those are almost summer numbers.
So, about 59, 65, 70. About 70 for the top four, give or take. So,
I mean,
not bad.
And also, you guys got to consider the budget. Arthur the King was only made for about $20 million, and it's made $7.5 million. So, it's almost made half its money back already. Yep. So,
and they probably had to pay the dog like $10
million. Sure.
Probably. So,
Okay. I think that's it then. Why don't we wrap this episode up?
All right.
Because you talk most of it, why don't you talk some more, Keith? You can do the promos.
You can reach us at movingthemealog@gmail.com, movingthemeal on X/Twitter, and give us a listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts.
Okay. All right. So for this episode of Movies in the Meal, I'm Ben.
Keith.
Brad. Peace.